Hello and welcome to the Displaced African podcast. The Displaced African is the African immigrant's personal development blog, which can be found at www.thedisplacedafrican.com.
Father, forgive them, for they know not what they've done. First, I was afraid, no doubt petrified, reflecting on my life, wondering just how I survived. I recall my childhood always feeling like I want to run away or commit suicide, always fearing having company because that's when I'll be stripped of my pride. Esteem tossed to the side as parents transform into Jekyll and Hyde. I recall being the best and brightest in school, winning full scholarships, awards, mad stuff, only to come home and feel like you're not good enough. I remember kneeling by my bed, praying to God for the end of my days. Walking by the cemetery, envying the lucky bastard in the grave. I remember wanting out so badly that I wouldn't take my medicine for sickle cell, hoping to have a crisis and it would just kill me. I remember being unclothed and disrobed and stripped down to my little white Fruit of the Loom brief and being beaten until the blood broke freely from my skin. And as a child, trouble was something I was never in. My dad justified by saying responsibility he was teaching. He used all manner of electric wires to make sure that my 8-year-old skin stayed on fire. And by 9, I concluded that appearance love was just too much for any child to desire. And if you look into my eyes, it was obvious they successfully extinguished my fire.
That was a small sample of the people's poet himself, Kirk Nugent, who I shall be interviewing today. For those of you who don't know who Kirk Nugent is, go look for him by either going to Google and typing MySpace Kirk Nugent and checking out his page, or going to kirknugent.com, and Kirk is kirknugent.com, or by going to YouTube and typing the words pursue your passion, and you'll get to learn a bit more about Kirk Nugent. This is probably one of the best interviews I've ever done. Kirk was an absolutely phenomenal human being, a lot to learn from him. I recorded this especially for those of you who might be just about to begin something major in your life, whether it's starting up universities, changing up jobs, any major decision in your life, and you need a fire, you need some passion, and you need to learn what to do. This one's for you. I hope you enjoy. This is Mwangi here. Be blessed. Be a blessing unto others. Enjoy. Hi, this is Mwangi here, and I'm here today with Kirk Nugent, who a lot of you might know from the video Pursue Your Passion. And Kirk, how are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I am very well. Thank you very much. So, Kirk, tell us who you are and what you do.
Wow, that's a big question. Chris, for me, I'm just Kirk Nugent, but I am a poet, spoken word artist, motivational speaker. I speak to a lot of young people about living life on their terms, pursuing their passion, going after what's in their heart. I also speak to a lot of juvenile delinquents and just young people that are struggling to find their way, because I really believe that if you follow your heart and follow what was placed there, chances are you can find your path. So we just have to listen to that inner voice. So that's pretty much what I teach.
Okay, so how did you arrive at that point? From your biography, I hear that you were born in Kingston. So how did someone born in Kingston end up all the way in the United States doing what you do?
You want the Reader's Digest version, or you want the...
As much depth as you want, man. This is your soapbox.
Okay, here we go. I was born and raised in Kingston, Jamaica. I came from a very, for lack of a better word, abusive family. My father was a big disciplinarian, but there's a fine line between discipline and abuse. So I went through a lot of abuse. I never felt wanted, never felt needed, never felt loved. This is in the environment of Jamaica. I was also diagnosed with sickle cell anemia, so the doctors predicted and told my parents that I'd be dead by the age of 13.
What are the symptoms of sickle cell anemia?
Sickle cell anemia is basically a blood disorder where your blood cells are not round, but they're shaped like a sickle. So they have a very hard time circulating through your body, and you get these really crucial pains that's called a sickle cell crisis. It depletes your liver, your spleen, your internal organs. It eats away at those, and eventually you usually die at a young age because of all the complications. And the average child that I went to school with in Jamaica that had sickle cell, they're dead and gone by now, long gone. but for some reason, I'm still here. And when I came to America, like I said, I never felt like I belonged in my family. I never felt like I was wanted or needed. When I came to America, I came to America at age 15. I was introduced to the concept of racism. So now in the larger society, I felt unwanted, I felt unneeded, and unloved. So I felt that way in the family unit, and I felt that way in the unit of the American society.
And did you move to the States on your own?
No. My mom came here in search of a better life for us. She came here I was 12 years old when she left Jamaica. She came to America and worked illegally for some rich family, and in turn they sponsored her. They paid her like slave wages, and after 3 years, okay, we'll get an attorney to file for you, and you'll be able to come here you'll be able to bring your family up. So that's how we came here, because my mom really believed that if she could get up here, we would have more options when we came out of school, which is the truth, and we would have a better life. Again, that was the truth. So she made a lot of sacrifices. Without going into too much detail, she did. She wanted us to have a better life, a better sacrifice, and she came here. Just to recap, all the abuse and the stuff that I went through, my parents didn't know what love was. So it was very difficult for them to even attempt to give someone love. I always ask my audience, when you squeeze an orange, what comes out? And they say juice. And I said, be more specific. Well, orange juice. Well, when you squeeze a grapefruit, what comes out? Grapefruit juice. Is it possible to squeeze an orange and get grapefruit juice? Absolutely not. So if there wasn't any love inside in the first place, when life squeezed my parents, it's impossible for love to come out. All that was there was fear and anger, so that's all that came out in the manner we were raised. So I don't want anyone to listen to the interview and judge my parents. Back to the story. We came here to America, and I just, you know, in the larger society, I saw a lot of racism. I saw a lot of police brutality, and this fueled my anger. It fueled my rage, and I started searching for a better path, and I started listening to speakers like Les Brown, Zig Ziglar, Norman Vincent Peale, and taking tidbits of what they were saying and just playing it back in the back of my mind that our thoughts control our destiny. Maybe if I change the way I think, I could change my life. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And it's these thoughts. It didn't happen overnight. It took years for these thoughts to flush out the other negative thoughts that was in me, the low self-esteem, the depression, the lack of any great self-concept. It took years to flush that out to become the person that you see on stage today.
Wow. And do you remember the first time like you saw the work of Les Brown or Norman Vincent or any of these guys?
Absolutely. The very first time I saw Les Brown, he was on television doing a PBS special. And Les was talking about his childhood, being abandoned as a child, being given up for adoption, feeling unwanted, feeling unneeded. And I could identify with his emotional pain. And then I'm listening to the words that's coming out of his mouth and realizing that I'm feeling empowered. And I said to myself, not even believing that I could do any of this, but I said to myself, you know, one day I want to do that. I want to be a motivational speaker. I want to really just speak back life into other people's life. And it's so ironic, man, about 15 or 14 years later, I'm on stage with Les, we're traveling together, we're doing so many things together, so it's definitely a blessing. But Les was the first person who shined any light into my life, who gave me any hope, who told me I was worthy of anything great.
Wow. And so you went to high school in the States for a while, and did you end up going to university, or what happened after high school?
It's so ironic that you asked me, because I just had a conversation with my dad yesterday, and I was always a brilliant student, but I was always sickly with this sickle cell. I would miss sometimes months at a time out of school. So it's so funny, because when I came to America, I went to a high school in Irvington, New Jersey. It was all black. And when I went there, I excelled. I was so brilliant because the level of education in Jamaica was so much higher because we have that British system because we were a colony of England. So it was nothing. I was advanced. I excelled. I did great. 2 years into the American educational system, I transferred to another school 6 miles from where I was going to school. Now this school is all white. I'm the only black student, and I struggled to keep abreast of the curriculum. The education that the whites were getting was so much greater than what we were getting in the black community. And I'm like, my God. So when it came time for me to go to college, I said to my dad, you know, I'm getting really good grades, and I want to go to school. I love to talk. I believe I'll make a great attorney. And my dad said, I'm not wasting any more money on any more kids. So I decided, well, I'm going to go to school regardless. So I started working. I was working full-time at a hospital from midnight to 8 in the morning. And I would leave and go to college, a community college, from 9 in the morning until about 4 in the afternoon. And then I would leave and go to the library and be at the library from about 8 at night until 8 at night. And then I would leave, go home, get about 2 hours sleep, and go back to work. After 3 months, I had another sickle cell crisis. Had a temperature that wouldn't check for about 5 or 6 days. The doctors again predicted that I wouldn't come out of the hospital. I'm going to die. And when I finally recovered, they said, you can't continue like this. You're going to kill yourself. Either you work or you go to school, but you can't do both. And I decided in my mind, and what I'm saying right now is just for me. I'm not advising anyone of this. But in my mind, I decided a college degree is nothing but a piece of paper for me to show somebody that I'm qualified to work for them. I don't need one. I can make it in this society on my own without the piece of paper, without the job security. That was what I believed at 19. So I don't want someone to listen to this and say, well, Kurt Nugent said I don't need an education, because that's not what I'm saying. I have read in my years from the time I dropped out of school to now, I have read probably 20 or 30 times the books that the average college student will read going through school and above and beyond. I'm always reading, always building, always growing. I read at least 2 or 3 books per month. So I'm always constantly building what I'm doing. Sometimes I read 2 books a week, depends on what my schedule looks like. So to answer your question, long story short, I went to college for a semester.
And then you left. And what did you leave? Did you leave to continue working in the hospital, or did you look for another job?
No, that's another good story. I left and went. I was still working in the hospital, but I decided I wanted to make more money. I want to earn more money. There was a job in the hospital. I was making $250 per week at the time. I saw a job in the newspaper paying $400 per week. I went and did the interview, and the woman that interviewed me, well, let me recap the story. I saw the ad paying $400 per week, and I said to a friend of mine, listen, there's a job, a sales position. They're paying $400 a week. Let's go and get this job, because this was back before the internet, all this other stuff where you could post your resume online. You have to actually go and interview. So I didn't even have any money back then, man. So I went to the Salvation Army thrift store, and I bought some clothes. For $20, I got a pair of pants, a shirt, a jacket, and a tie. And my boy got a similar outfit. Now, we're from Jamaica. I don't know if you've ever been to Jamaica, but Jamaica is a very colorful place. So I'm on this interview looking like a commercial for Skittles. And my boy is looking like Rainbow Bright. So the human resource manager, she took one look at us and she said, we're not hiring. And I said, no problem, because I knew that they had 3 locations in New Jersey. So I said to her, where's your next store? Oh, it's in Edison. I got in the car, and I said to my friend, listen, let's go to this next location. Immediately, he started becoming negative. Man, these people will never give us a job. And he started killing the dream. So I said to him, listen, I'm going on this interview. It's my car. I'm driving. You either get in the car or you catch the bus home. But I'm going on this interview. I'm getting this job. I came here to make $400 per week. That's what's going to happen today. Something's going to happen for me. So he got in the car. He kept complaining. When we got to the second location, he never got out to do the interview. On the second location, the human resource manager was kind enough, gave me the interview, and said, well, if something comes up, we'll call you. Listen, I know where your East Hanover store is. I know where your Edison store is. Where is your third location? It is in Secaucus, New Jersey. No problem. I got in the car, drove to the third location. Now, Einstein said one definition of insanity is to keep on doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. If you want something to change in your life, if something is not working, you have to find a different way to do it. You have to change up the game plan. So I figured, okay, I wasn't making any progress, maybe because I didn't have any experience, maybe because I didn't know too much about electronics, because this was an electronics chain. So I went to the third location, and I saw a young lady on the sales floor. I said to her, listen, what department are they hiring for? She said, electronics. I said, where's your electronics department? She showed me. I went over there, took a quick scan of what they sold, and went into human resource. The human resource manager said, do you have any experience selling electronics? And I figured that's why I wasn't making any progress, because I didn't have any experience. So immediately, remember what Einstein said, one definition of insanity is to keep on doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. I'm going to do something different. So without even blinking, I said, of course, I have tons of experience selling electronics. I used to sell electronics in Jamaica. The store burnt down. That's why we came to America. She can't take the reference, right? So she said, okay, well, what did you sell in Jamaica? I said, I sold, and bear in mind, this was back in 1989. Car phones and fax machine was a new technology. It wasn't even called cell phones back then. It was car phones, and it was gigantic, this huge thing that sat in the car. And I said, I sold car phones. She's like, oh, my God, we don't have anybody here who know about car phones. That is so wonderful. What brand did you sell? I forgot to look at the brands. So I figure, okay, I got to think on my feet. If Alpine make a good car stereo, I bet you they make a car phone. So without blinking again and with confidence, I said, I sold Alpines in Jamaica. She said, oh, my God, that is a top-selling brand we carry, but we call it Fujitsu. I said, okay, great. She said, when can you start? I said, I can start in 2 weeks. She said, wonderful. I left, and I went to the big bookstore, Barnes & Noble's. And I bought every magazine they had on car phones. I went to the competitors, and I started asking within 2 weeks, what is the difference between this phone and that phone? What is the difference between this fax machine and that fax machine? I started buying books by Zig Ziglar. I'm reading selling techniques. When I got to the store, I asked, who is the best salesperson here? They told me Frankie is the best salesperson. Whenever Frankie had a customer, I was right there next to Frankie, dusting the cabinet case, listening to how he overcame the objection, listening to his pitch. Within a couple of months, within 6 months actually, I was the number one salesperson in the company. They gave me an all-expense-paid trip to the Bahamas. So I'm in the Bahamas relaxing, right? Let me see what's going on Bahamian TV. I'm down there. I'm chilling. I'm working on my tan. Turn on Bahamian television to see what's going on. America's Most Wanted. Who was on America's Most Wanted? My friend. These people will never give us a job. He went out and did an armed robbery and murdered somebody for $50. He's locked up to this day. He'll be locked up until the day I die. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Because here we are. We're both from Jamaica. Both had the same level of education. Both had the same clothing. Both had the same experience. But in his mind, these people will never give us a job. In my mind, this is America. This is a land of opportunity. I'm going to make it do what it do, baby.
Wow. Man. So how did you go from that to becoming a speaker?
Going from that, I went from job to job to job to job. I never spent a lot of time on a job. I was never a good. That first job, I was a really good employee. But after that, I wasn't a good employee. I didn't cut out to do this thing because I knew this is not what I came to do. It wasn't fulfilling. I was making money, but it wasn't fulfilling. And I remember working. The last job I had before I left and became a poet, because the poet thing happened before the speaker. I was working at another good store, furniture store. I was making great money. I think I was 25 years old, making about $60,000 or $70,000 a year. So it was decent money to be in America. It was definitely decent money to be a young black male without a college education. But it wasn't my passion. It felt like something, a refrigerator fell on my shoulder when I went to work. It just wasn't what I came to do. And I left, and I went to this Jamaican restaurant where I would buy food at the end of the night, and there was this young man outside selling incense, newspapers, and some other stuff. And he said to me, young man, won't you help me sell some newspaper and start your own business? And I said to him, sell some paper? Nah, man, I don't have time for that. I have a good job. He said, well, what about after work? Dude, I work from 10 in the morning till 10 at night. I don't have time after work. He said, well, what about on your day off? I said, man, I work 6 days a week. The one day that I'm off, it's time to do my dry cleaning and get back to work. And he said to me, and no one forces you to do this? You just get up and do it on your own? I said, yeah, pretty much. He said, oh, man, that's a shame. I said, what's a shame? He said, you were born at the wrong time. And that puzzled me because I think now he's about to tell me some prophetic, profound insight. And I said, what do you mean I was born at the wrong time? He said, you would have made a good slave.
Ooh.
And it floored me. You would have made a good slave. Because here I am in America, the so-called freest country on the planet, and I am chained to a paycheck. I am being detained by a desk, held hostage to a HMO. And I said, man, he's right. I remember I went home and I grabbed some book. I don't remember what book it was. And I opened it to a quotation. And the quotation said, you can never steal second base with one foot still on first. Wow. If you're going to commit to something, commit 100%. So I decided, not only am I going to steal second base, I'm going to make it home. The next day I went to work and I quit my job. But life doesn't stop. Because you got some courage. So 3 months later, the sheriff came. You haven't paid your mortgage in 3 months. You got to get up out of here. So I took everything that I owned and I put it in storage. Now I'm homeless. 3 months later, I went to the storage because I can't pay the bill. And I'm at an auction, watching them auction every material piece of possession I had. I told you I was selling furniture, so my bedroom set alone cost about $8,000 or $9,000. I'm at this auction watching. Now we have a nice bedroom set going at $200, going once, going twice, sold. And everything I own gone under $500. A friend of mine said to me, Kirk, you are nuts. Man, put your suit back on and go back to work. And I said, let me tell you something. I will never worry about losing a grain of sand. Not when I know I can own the beach. I don't care about any of that. And I kept going to the poetry clubs. I kept performing. I kept believing in my dream, kept moving. And it got worse. The next thing happened, somebody stole my car. So for the first time since I'm 17 years old, I'm catching the bus. I'm riding a train. People are looking at me, you know, with their nose turned up. I remember when he had some ambition. I remember when he was somebody. Now I'm the child that parents no longer speak about because I'm not doing anything with my life. I'm doing this, whatever this poetry thing is. And I kept pursuing it. And one day a gentleman saw me in the poetry club and he said to me, listen, I like your style. I like what you do. Can you write a poem for us about AIDS? I had no idea who us was. But at the same time, I was very cocky when it came to my poetry. So I said, dude, I'm Kurt Nugent. I can write whatever. Stop playing. He said, okay, write a poem about AIDS. So I went home. I said, well, how do you want me to write? You want me to write as an AIDS victim? You want how? He said, I don't care. Just write a poem about AIDS. So I did. I wrote the poem. I called him the next day. And I said, I have the poem for you. I want to read it. He said, okay, great. We're in a board meeting. Let me put you on the speakerphone. Please read the meeting. Read the poem to the board. I read the meeting. I read the poem. They loved it. He said, well, can you come to New York next week and perform this poem? I said, well, I live in New Jersey. To get back and forth from New York to New Jersey on a train is $5. I don't have the $5, so to be honest with you, no, I can't come to New York. He said, well, can you borrow the $5? I said, well, if I borrow the $5, how am I going to pay it back? He said, well, I'll give you the $5 back. I said, let me tell you something, man. I'm not a poet. If I come over there and you don't have my money, he said, ah, Kirk, focus on the big picture and just get over here. I said, okay. I borrowed $5, took the train, went to New York. They had this huge Haitian festival. It was an AIDS awareness conference in Central Park, New York. I got on the stage and I performed a poem. I was on stage for 3, maybe 5 minutes. When I was done, he handed me an envelope. I took the envelope and put it in my pocket because I knew it was my $5. I went back to Jersey. When I got home, I opened the envelope. It was a check for $1,500. I called him up. Exactly. I called him up. I said, dude, you know how many commas and zeros are on this check? He said, oh, Kirk, we always pay $1,500 for a performance. I said, let me tell you something, man. I got poems about syphilis, gonorrhea, herpes, and that's how I got started. And from there, I kept performing, and the poetry evolved into, I wanted to speak more in between doing poems. I wanted to tell my stories. I wanted to enlighten the people. And I started studying Les Brown and studying quotes and studying other speakers, and the poetry evolved into me being a speaker. So that's where the whole pursue your passion came about, because I never knew I could do any of this. All I knew, I was pursuing a passion for poetry, a passion for performing, a passion for speaking. And that led to this. And this led to thousands of people emailing me, oh my God, Kirk, you touched my life. You saved me. I was going through something and you spoke a word to me. I never knew any of this was possible. All I knew, I was in pain emotionally, spiritually, and I wanted to do something different. I felt like I was enslaved on my job, and the poetry was my way out. I pursued it, and I ended up here. And I'm not done yet. God is not done with me. I'm not finished growing. It took me 10 years to become an overnight success.
10 years?
10
wow.
years.
Wow. Now, but I'm
first
definitely...
time I got on a... I'm sorry?
No, I was just about to say, now I'm definitely like one of those people who definitely got majorly inspired, because when I first saw Pursue Your Passion, I hadn't started doing what I was doing, so yeah, Pursue Your Passion is definitely one of the reasons that I'm doing what I'm doing right now, so I'm in that thousands and thousands list.
Wow, thank you. I appreciate it, man, definitely. But I believe that's what life is about, man. If you let your light shine, it will attract other people, and they'll come and they'll start shining their light. You know, and the light might be a flicker at first. It might not be as bright. It will be a flicker, but the more they shine, the more they practice, that light gets stronger and stronger. I always tell people, whatever you want to do, listen to me. You don't have to be great to get started, but you have to get started in order to be great.
Amen.
You have to work on yourself. You have to get a little better. I tell my audience, I said, listen, the difference between a gold medal in the Olympics and no medal is less than a second. So you have to constantly work on yourself, work and getting better.
Amen. So,
yes, sir.
That was part one of my interview with the phenomenal Kirk Nugent. I hope you're enjoying the story so far. It continues on the second edition of this podcast, which should be coming out very, very soon. For more information on Kirk Nugent and his phenomenal work, www.kirknugent.com. Or go to MySpace and look for Kirk Nugent's page, which is K-I-R-K-N-U-G-E-N-T again. Or just go to YouTube and see Kirk Nugent do his thing. The video is Pursue Your Passion. Ladies and gentlemen, have a phenomenal, phenomenal, passionate week. And look forward to seeing you on the second edition of this podcast. Mwangi here. Be blessed and bless others. You have been listening to the Displaced African podcast. The Displaced African is the African immigrant's personal development blog, which can be found at www.thedisplacedafrican.com.